ready.
Abe?
Yes, sir.
What should I say about the Attorney General now?
Well,
the acting one, I mean. What is the status? Have you ever looked at the law and know what the whole story is?
Yes,
what
sir.
What we can do? What can we do?
Well, you can clearly have him served for 30 days, and in my opinion, you can reappoint him then if the Senate is not in session. And I have a memorandum on that. And I think it's clear. It's clear enough. But,
Well, now, how do I do that? Do I just,
All you have to do is to announce right now that, they'd say that Mr. Katzenbach will continue as acting Attorney General. That's all you have to do.
Well, they're going to say, are you going to designate him?
You don't have to. He's acting Attorney General by reason of statute. You're just acknowledging the fact that exists under the statute.
All right.
That's all you have to do.
So, should I call him and say anything to him?
Yes, sir. I would, and I would say that I want to tell the press that you're going to serve as acting secretary and give us a chance to turn around. As acting attorney general.
Yeah.
And then give us a chance to turn around.
Now, wait a minute. That's not that clear to me. Give us a chance to turn around.
Well, I mean, give you a chance to decide what you want to do permanently is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to go into that. I just say I hope you're going to... I'm going to announce to the press that you're going to continue as acting Attorney General.
I ask you to take over the duties of the office as acting Attorney General, and I'll be talking to you a little bit later about whatever plans we got.
Yes, sir.
About our plans.
Yes, sir.
Now then, the Senate, if it's still here in 30 days, then what I do?
Well, the statute, if read literally, seems to indicate that you'd have to make a permanent appointment. But it's a crazy 19th century statute, and I think we could construe our way around it. But I believe that if the Senate is not in session, then it's a pretty clear case.
Ellinger said today that they ought to indict Don Reynolds for perjury, that he stood up there and didn't tell him about this thing and said he told him all he had and he didn't tell him about it. Old Williams got up and argued around with him and said, well, it's partially the committee's fault, partially this fellow's fault.
That's great. I think we've been doing very well today on this thing.
Did you get a report back from Jim? I guess you haven't because he was my meeting all afternoon.
No,
Jim Rowe.
I just haven't been able to get Jim.
Any other developments you know about?
No, sir. I talked with Nick and told him and again reiterated to him that that I thought it'd be a good idea if they took it kind of easy in terms of timing. And I asked him what they had gotten from Reynolds, and he said, well, Reynolds has skipped. FBI hadn't been able to find him, and I said, well, I assume you're not going to bother the Philadelphia man until you get information from Reynolds, because you'd have to come back and do it twice, and he said, that's right. And I've been trying to get the Philadelphia man. I'll be able to get him in the morning, and no rush about it, to warn him that if he's asked whether he's been talked to by the FBI for him to say, well, he's just not going to discuss it. And for him not to say that he has not been contacted by the FBI.
That's good.
Because if he says he hadn't been contacted by the FBI, that just puts pressure on us.
You ought to get a good many things for them to look at, too.
Yes, sir. It's hard in this thing, but I'm trying to dredge some up and make sure that they don't hurt us, you know. I also talked with Nick about the Wisconsin man, the congressman.
Yeah, what did he say?
He said he's got the file on his desk.
Attorney General about it. I said, I'm surprised y'all haven't done anything. He said, well, I am too. And I said, now, y'all talking seriously about whether Baker could be involved for taking $2,500 that he said he didn't take. He endorsed a check of $5,000. You saw where he deposited $2,500, so you assume that he got that from the $5,000 check, and that was for getting a bank charter. And you said that the man had to be neutral, a government employee, and if he used any influence, why, he was violating the law. And you can't prove that Baker ever got the money, and he never did contact anybody in the government about it. But this son of a bitch Burns, who's hauling morality, and who says that you've got to stop corruption in government, is chairman of the Republican Policy Committee, the leader of all the Republicans that determines all of their policy. And he not only tried to get Treasury to change the ruling, introduced a bill to force him to, and then blackjacked him and told him if it didn't, he'd pass the bill. And he's a ranking man on Ways and Means, he'd be chairman of it. And he made him change it, and his stock went up from 4 to 34, and they caught him. He came out crying on the floor of the house and said, I'm going to give it to charity. And I said, how in the hell does that absolve it, Bobby? And he said he couldn't understand it. So I think that they ought to be asking some questions, just studying that thing, going out there and seeing when he bought his stock and how much, and what he did with it, and see what charity he gave it to.
Yeah.
And let them know. Maybe interview Dirksen, what he knows about his character, Hallie. They always interviewing everybody else about folks. I don't know why they don't.
Yeah.
Because the time's going to come when Pearson and some of these folks are going to have to say that this Bobby Baker is not just a Democratic case. And all the senators voted for him. All the Republicans, including Williams, selected Bobby Baker. They had a roll call. I mean, they voted for him.
Yes.
And that's number one. And number two, the only guy that's really got off any dough is the chairman of the Republican Policy Committee.
Yes, that's right.
How in the hell they can blame the Democrats for that, I don't know. Because he's a Republican undersecretary.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to have to start a little on Humphrey, reopen that case a little bit, and maybe call Sherman Adams back in here.
Yeah.
I think if they want to play with this thing, well, we're going to have to play it, and that's the only way you're going to stop them. You ain't going to stop them at all by just hunking up and taking it, dodging them.
Say, Mr. President, I don't think this is yet anything to get concerned about, but I was talking with a man in the steel industry today, and he was talking about the need for price increase, and I said, you don't think these crazy fellas are going to try to pull a price increase before the election, do you? And he said he didn't think so. Because he'd be afraid of what a block of inland steel would do. But he said, I wouldn't put it beyond them. And of course, and he was talking about George Humphrey. George Humphrey's a fellow who, of course, sits at the center of that whole web, steel companies, the iron ore companies. He said that he wouldn't put it beyond them to try something like that. I have some access there, and Clark does too, and I think we're just on our own. We ought to.
I sure think you ought to.
Get word around to these fellows.
Tell them now they're getting ready to start rabbit hunting and jump a bear.
That's right. Yeah, I think we ought to do that just to make sure. And they're mean enough and crazy enough to do it. Of course, George Humphrey is just violently pro gold, wasn't he?
I think that if you can get this one over somewhere. I don't know what you do if that committee comes into operation. That's what I think they will. But I don't see how, if the principal and McCluskey's lawyers are smart enough, that they can't say, now, I'm not particularly concerned about the general insurance, the general liability. I've got my own. But this is a picture of $14 million, $30,000 is not a big item. And he sent me a bill for it, for the bond. And I was being a buster and getting out, and I didn't personally check it. It wasn't much out of line.
He didn't sign the bill, Mr. President. It was signed by his son. He did not sign the check. It's perfectly okay for him to say he just didn't know this thing went through the company automatically, and maybe somebody goofed.
And that they assumed that the liability had arranged for some liability insurance. And I don't know why the fellow didn't send the liability policy, but in principle, take the position that they never had any such agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I think this guy could go over the road, this son of a bitch Reynolds.
That's right.
Ed Williams and that man up there, I don't think they can ever show any kickback.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can show that it's the general liability and that son of a bitch never furnished.
Yes.
And then tried to run out on it.
Well, that's the way, as of last night, we're going to play it. That's exactly it.
And at the proper time, now, what's he going to do? Will he have to take the Fifth Amendment, McCluskey?
Oh, no, sir. As of last night, as I reported to you.
He just take the position. He got it for the bond and for general liability.
He says that the company received an invoice for $109,000 and so odd dollars. That it just went through the established company machinery, and a check was made out and the amount of the invoice, and that was that. And he says that this damn fella overcharged the company ought to sue him. I'm going to see to it that they look into it. See? He points out that the invoice had general liability as well as the foreman's bond.
And he didn't furnish what he promised and what he billed us for.
Yeah, and that company may sue him.
Okay, much better.
All right.